We all must have models. And through the years, our early morning sign-on show drew appreciation and inspiration from that. PDQ Bach on the air, as we refuse to lower ourselves to base humor on April 1st, whatever others may do. To prove that we're serious, something we have never done before and probably will never do again for another 3 or 4 months till he comes back, Greg Zawisza is officially leaving WBAA today, and that's not April Fool's. Today is his last day. Did you know that? That explains all of the Bobby Soxers out there at the door, stage door of the Hall of Music, weeping and wailing and everything. Greg Zawisza, you didn't do it. You went right past it this morning when you were doing your early morning show. But in the form of This Is Your Life, this is what we had planned for you.
If you haven't planned your garden planting program yet, it's probably too late. After all, it's the 1st of April, and you're guilty of terrible procrastination. So, to hell with it. Greg, it's your last day, and you don't have to put up with this anymore. Au revoir.
That's John Totten, of course, and you won't hear him do that again, I'll tell you that much. What do you think? Was it worth leaving just to hear that?
Well, just like PDQ Bach, I must have queued up the wrong cut this morning. It's been a strange morning, actually. As we mentioned earlier this morning during my official swan song, we're wrapping up just about 11 years on the staff here. If you do a little quick math, that's a little shy of one-third of my life, Roger. Started here when I was 6 years old.
I remember that for our listeners' benefit, I don't know if they know how far we go back, but I had been here a few years and was doing the usual thing of, I think it was autumn auditions, when this tall, skinny fellow from New Jersey came in. He had a burr haircut, and his hair was dark in those days. And he read, and he was impressive, you know, but he had a long way to go. Do you remember that?
I do indeed. The burr haircut, my goodness. I guess that was a function of being a member of the Purdue All-American Marching Band. And sitting in this very seat here in Green Studio, in our studios in the basement of the Hall of Music, and auditioning for you and Dave Bunty, I thought to myself, this is a kick and a half. Let's give it a shot and see what happens. And that was 1970, as I recall, when I started working here part-time as a student.
How long did you think it would last?
After my first station break on the air, I had a pretty good case of mic fright, and I was thinking maybe I should go back into refrigeration engineering or something a little less stressful. But I guess I spent the next couple of years here as a part-time student, then went on to a part-time stint working at WASK, and then let's see, finishing up school, and I did about a year and a half stint as a reporter and anchor on WLFI-TV. My goodness, then some sales for a while, and then I've been back here since May 1st, 1975.
Go back to your undergrad days when you were Bridie Murphy. What do you remember as some of the hardest things you had to learn as an announcer?
That's probably easy for me to answer in that, as you mentioned, I'm from New Jersey originally, and not having had any particular accent growing up in New Jersey, some of the weird pronunciations in Indiana, like the large city with the steel mills to our north, to my ear was always Gary, and here it sounded more to me like Gary. To me, the woman's name is Mary. When you wish someone a happy birthday of Christ, you say Merry Christmas, and if you go to a church to be legally wed, you get married. To me, there's three distinct words there. Here, it's like Merry Christmas, Mary Jones, and I'm going to go get married tomorrow.
And when we have a jazz spot from now on, after today, it'll be Barry Harris.
Barry Harris. Or a couple of years back when Joe Barry Carroll was on the Boilermaker basketball staff, I'd sometimes get flack for announcing that Joe Barry Carroll scored such and such points, and people would say, it's not Joe Barry Carroll, it's Joe Barry Carroll.
So there. Yeah, right, right. You and I share something. We both came up the other side of the microphone. I auditioned here, too, the day I got out of high school in 1938, before the war, and then have been here ever since, of course, because it does get in your blood, besides which, once you park out there, you can't find your car again. So I can tell you what it looked like from the other side of the mic. How about you? What were some of the adjustments you found rather unusual once you got onto the staff side of things instead of a volunteer?
The first hassle, of course, was getting up early, since I was compelled to do the early morning shift. Well, not compelled. I was asked to do it. As I mentioned earlier this morning, I recall distinctly when station manager Dave Bunty hired me. He had been doing the early sign-on shift for, I guess, about 5 years or so, and then he was kicked upstairs. And I thought to myself, early morning shift. And I'd been coming off a job where I'd been working the late night anchor shot at 10 or 11 at night. So my schedule was such that I might get up at 10 or 11 in the morning, work from noon to 10 or 11 at night, go home and have a beer and read the newspaper or something and hit the sack about 2 or 3 a.m. All of a sudden they're telling me, well, you're going to have to get up at 4 a.m. And this little voice said, I'll give it 2 months, maybe 3 months at the outside, and then I'm going to go back and be a Toyota salesman for a while. But that was the biggest adjustment. Apparently I made the adjustment since, again, it's been just about 11 years.
What was your toughest sign-on?
Oh, that was easy. A lot of folks who've been around for a while remember the great blizzard of late January 1978. And it was about midnight that the snow was really starting to fly. My wife woke me up. I got into bed a fairly normal time, 8 or 8:30 that evening. My wife woke me up and said, if you think for a minute you're going to get your little compact out of the driveway and the couple miles it takes to get from our house to the radio station, you are crazy. You better get up and figure something out, because there's no way you're going to get the car out of the driveway. So I did get up, and she made me some sandwiches, and this was about 1:30 or so, and had some calls into the Purdue police and West Lafayette police, and eventually what happened is the Purdue police were sending around four-wheel drive vehicles to pick up people like boiler operators and food service personnel and radio announcers and the like. So I got picked up about 1:30 or quarter to 2 that morning, came down here, down in our basement, if you know where our studios are, very quiet and very insulated from the rest of the world. There's a very soft old vinyl sofa here in the corner of this studio, camped out on that with my alarm clock, and then we signed on normally the next morning. Being the only one down here was a bit of a problem, because there were certainly phone calls wondering if such and such was closed or what's going to be open, and official calls coming in. As it turned out, you managed to make it in with a crock pot full of casserole and some sandwiches.
By the way, that spoiled later that day. We didn't eat it.
We sent out some urgent calls over the air for, does anyone in the Hall of Music have any sandwiches or crackers or anything in their offices that we break into? But anyway, seems to me we spent the next 2 or 3 nights here and finally got home. Let's see, that must have been Wednesday or so, and got home Saturday morning, you know, when the roads had cleared out a little bit. One thing I do remember being very grateful for in retrospect after about the second or third day was that whoever designed our studios designed hermetically sealed doors between the window, between the studios and the triple pane glass, because my little flannel shirt was getting a little on the raw side about the third day or so.
Interesting, too, how the students, nonplussed by the storm, rushed right out and emptied shelves. Remember that? We sent one of our volunteer emissaries out, and he came back sparsely loaded.
It was an emergency situation, and he handled himself superbly. But that was probably the most difficult sign-on, was the fact that we ended up being down here for a couple or 3 days or so. And I'm sure our colleagues in radio and television and newspapers, too, have similar horror stories that they won't soon forget.
Who are some of the characters you remember over the years, without being libelous, of course?
Oh, my. Some of the political folks that have come in through town over the years I've found interesting. George Wallace was at the Purdue Airport several years ago, and this must have been when he was, must have been in the late 70s. I'm not sure if he was still running for something or not, but a very unusual and tense moment. We were out at the airport on the apron there, the taxiway Media Corps interviewing and hollering questions at George Wallace. And at one point, there were obviously some Secret Service people around him because of the assassination attempt against him in the early 70s. But at one point, I reached down to pick up my portable tape recorder, and the machine I had at the time had a little kind of a click trigger to turn it on. And the Secret Service saw me reach down and heard a click, and there was 2 or 3 very tense seconds when they realized finally that it was simply a tape recorder I was turning on and not something else. I thought for a second the fellows in the three-piece suits and the sunglasses were going to wrestle me and my skinny body to the ground and totally destroy my tape recorder. But it was a very tense and very memorable moment, actually. That just one in a series of things. Some of the folks we've had a chance to meet over the years, I particularly enjoyed talking to the astronauts. Remember asking Gene Cernan, what's it really like jumping around on the moon with the 1/6 gravity that you have here? Or some of the shuttle folks that have come here in more recent years. Some of the artists, the visiting artists and the like. It's been a very rich experience for me.
Volunteers, remember any of those who have come and gone? Greatness or perhaps non-greatness?
No. Well, actually, yes. But you know, that certainly the names fade after a while. You'll remember a certain gal who, let's say, had brown hair and was a short gal who all of a sudden you'll see on an Indianapolis TV station, or a guy who had a particularly good voice and perhaps he's working for a network somewhere, things like that. So, you know, a lot of folks are aware of this fact that over the years, a lot of interesting folks have passed through our doors and have done just what you and I have been doing over the years. People like George Pappard, Karen Black, Chris Schenkel, and a lot of folks in radio and television in Indiana who got their start right here.
You acquired a family. You became a Purdue family, a stanchion of the university extended nuclei.
Indeed, yeah. You know, if someone had told me when I was a Purdue freshman or sophomore 16, 17 years ago that in the mid-80s I'd have a job here and a family. My wife is the publicity and PR director in the Purdue Theater Department. We happened to meet in a theater class about 15 years ago. And we've got a 5-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old daughter. If someone had told me anyway that I'd make my home in Indiana after having grown up in Manhattan and northern New Jersey, I would say, well, no. As soon as I get out of school, I'm going to rush back there and I'm going to be a network vice president. But funny things sometimes happen, and I'm glad they happened the way they did.
You really think like an East Coaster now. Come on, don't you?
You know what? I lost a lot of that. My folks still live in northern Jersey. I've got a sister who lives in Manhattan. And when I go visit them, I think, I really prefer the lifestyle here, which gives rise to a good luck card I got the other day, which sort of said, good luck in the rat race. I hope you like it. So in case someone is unaware, I'm joining the staff of WGMS AM and FM radio in Washington, D.C. That's the commercial fine arts classical station serving D.C., sort of like the WFMT of Washington. A lot of folks who listen to our station are familiar with WFMT in Chicago. So it's a similar concept to that. So I'll be also throwing away my alarm clocks for a while since we'll be working some evening shifts.
Night people. You'll find them a fascinating, wonderful breed. Well, I'll tell you what. You have one last chance, unless you, of course, sneak in and do a tape on the John Totten cut for Kristen some morning, but you have one last chance right now to give a final parting message. I advise you to steer away from telling people to guard against separation of church and state. I think George Washington had that.
It has been my distinct pleasure, Roger, over these past 10 years and 11 months to the day to, as I mentioned earlier this morning, serve a very special and caring group, namely you, the listener. And without a doubt, in my biased opinion, you are listening to one dandy old radio station. And keep it right here.
Greg Zawisha, we've been through some up times and some down times, some hard mornings and short nights and long days over the last several years. And it's going to be a shame to see you go, just from the point of view of having had a friend out there who named our end of the office Jade West, for very good reason. It will remain Jade West long after you go, and we will put a little memorial plaque right up there on the sign that says there is no greater burden than great potential. May you fulfill it. We'll see you.
Thank you, Roger.
Greg Zawisha. Meanwhile, back to the other early morning radio show.